Yes, Cymru Radio. Yes. Radio Free Wales.
Yes. Hello again and welcome to Radio Yes Cymru, the podcast, which is also on YouTube. I'm Sean Jobbins. I'm going to have a very interesting conversation, I know, with Jim Wingate, who is the co-author with Jen Llewellyn of a new booklet, which will be published by the end of April, called Radical Steps to Welsh Independence by First Decolonising Our Minds, which is exactly the type of title I'd like to see to a book, Jim. So thanks for making the time to join in Radio Yes Cymru today. Would you just like to give yourself a quick introduction to who you are and who Jen is, and then we'd talk about the book?
Yeah. I'm half Scottish and half Welsh. My mother was Nest Morgan, and when she was a child, she sat on Lloyd George's knee, because Lloyd George and my grandfather, I was named for, James, were great fans of Home Rule for Wales and used to meet in his house until Lloyd George rather went off independence.
Yeah.
And it's 20 radical steps, taking up Dilys Davis's 20 points, which Jen and I went to see at Llangrannog, 20 points that are in the academic canon of what colonization is. And for each negative, like feeling useless, there's a positive useful. So what we're doing with the book is shifting people from the negative to the positive with mental exercises, true stories, and our own passion and interest.
Yeah, it's just, it's a handbook, and it's a very handy handbook. And I think what yourself and Jen have published, I think, is a very important canon towards the independence movement. You know, it's, and building on work which Dilys Davis has done a lot of last 10, 20 years on the psychology of, you know, fighting for independence, the kind of arguments we need to do, and the arguments used against to make people feel they can't do anything and they shouldn't do anything. So you're trying to tackle that head on. It's a nice little book. I think the intention is to bring it out and have some discussions around it. We'll discuss that later on. But I mean, as you say, and we were discussing before the item, you know, there's always important points we need to get over about the economics of independence, what kind of society we can have. But I think with yourself, Jim and Jen, have realised is really at the core is a very much a psychological argument. And you know, economics doesn't change much. What changes is people's perceptions. If we can do something, if they can, Wales can be independent or not. So the 20 points, what kind of things would you suggest which are used against us or the independence movement and have done internationally and which we need to do to combat? How would you describe those things?
Well, when I was living in Scotland and voting SNP, we only had one SNP MP in Westminster, Winnie Ewing. And now we've got a whole government in Scotland with a majority of SNP. So how did that come about? What were the steps that made Scottish people not feel oppressed or inferior and made them feel they could stand up and speak for themselves? And that's what we've been trying to do, is help our fellow Welsh people in Wales to stand up and speak for themselves with resolving the colonized values that have been pushed into us.
Yeah, so
having resolved those, we can then speak as independent people for an independent Wales in an independent Wales.
Yeah, so to give examples, so you talk about people having, in a way, we've suffered of negative self-talk, haven't we? We told ourselves we're unable to do stuff. We have poor thinking, you know, we can't do stuff. And then, of course, the outcome is that, you know, we're just in the situation it's in. So what kind of practical stuff? And you give this in the book, and it's nice. There's almost a chart in the bottom towards the end of the book, which people can follow and have a look at. And I think that's very handy. What kind of things would you point out which people can be doing starting from today?
Well, the first thing we say is that we don't need to be trapped by the past and the present into the future. Okay, the past may have been terrible, the present may be terrible, but it doesn't mean the future has to be terrible. And liberating us from being burdened by the past is a very liberating thing. It's great fun. As you say, it's the clear psychology that needs to change. Dilys Davis is producing her own book about it, which will also give us more insights, probably from a more academic point of view. And as you say, we're doing more of a manual. I mean, self-deprecating, saying, oh, we're not really good, we don't worry about us, to being self-affirming is quite a thing to do. And somewhere along the line between that negative and that positive, you've got to find out where you are and then try and move yourself along a bit. And we use lots of true stories and what can you do as the means to get there. Because Jen and I aren't giving the solutions. The solutions come from inside each person themselves. We've put in a number of pages you can give to English incomers to help them to understand, at least be supportive, even if they don't become themselves pro-independence, they can at least understand. Because with the number of people who are supportive of independence in Wales and would vote for independence, it's not big enough yet.
No. And this is the book. I mean, and yourself and Jen give examples of how you personally have dealt with things, have been part of movements which have tried to change the way a movement perceives itself, or where people ask questions about the movement. Jen talks about her experience with a campaign for an elected mayor in Ceredigion. Ultimately, it wasn't successful, but the movement itself created a lot of networks, a feeling of being able to change things. And it did change the politics in Ceredigion, I think, because we don't now have so many independent councillors. People are thinking maybe a bit more strategic about what they want for the council than they would have done maybe 20 years ago.
Yes.
So are there any other experiences? Because I think what's interesting as well is both you and Jen have a background which includes being raised outside Wales. You've come into Wales with a good understanding of Wales through your family and through reading books and everything. I think you're coming to a situation which maybe is different point of view from what I have, which I find interesting. And basically maybe what we need as well, isn't it? So you're giving maybe a more dispassionate view of, okay, these things aren't working for you, or these are things we need to consider to move the whole movement on.
Yes, we were born in England, but we feel Welsh.
Yeah.
And as I say, I'm half Scottish. My father was greatly criticised by his family when he wanted to marry a non-Scottish person.
Right.
But when they found that my would-be mother was Welsh, it was accepted.
That's good to know.
And my great-great-grandfather was imprisoned for being a Rebecca rioter.
Oh.
So he was in prison for seditious riot against the English state for defending rights in Wales.
Yeah, well, that's a badge of honour. Well, I mean, your family, Jim, is quite impressive. I did know this about you. I knew of you before, of course. But when you're related to Ord Wingate and Sir Reginald Wingate, serious historical figures, which I'd heard about and read about before meeting you, I was quite in awe. And you talk in a book briefly about that background and how they, in a way, disregarded some of the rules they were taught or told to implement. Sir Reginald Wingate essentially told the British state in 1918, I think you say, that, you know, Britain's finished here in Egypt. It's time now we let the Egyptians run the country, which is a good 20, 30 years before it really happened. Try to get people educated, you know, from the Egyptian public to become administrators. And then you have Ord Wingate, a very famous person in the British military, was doing the same in East Africa with the what was called Abyssinia then, Ethiopia, in terms of building up the capability to kick out the Italians. So this is a great pedigree, Jim, I've got to say.
Yes, there's so many imperial powers in the world. To be right next to one of England is pretty bad. What was it? The first colony practicing colonization on us. I've written a couple of novels about that and reversing that, because again, it's the, as you say, it's the psychology, it's the inner feeling about being inferior, only being allowed to live in the countryside, not being allowed to be in the towns after sunset in Wales, not allowed to speak our own language. It's a pattern all around the world. And
I'll just first bring that in. So, I mean, people say, okay, look, Jim, we understand that happened like centuries ago, where there were these penal laws against the Welsh after Glyndŵr's rebellion and everything. And, you know, and yeah, we understand, you know, there was this Welsh knot in the 1870s. And yeah, okay, you know, Tryweryn happened in the 1960s, but these are history, and you know, we're quite old history now because we're getting on as well. I mean, would you say those are relevant for people today? You know, are people really not voting for independence because what happened, you know, 600 years ago or 150 years ago, whatever?
Well, I think what we've got is a past which we need to investigate and test. We've got these two tests, as you mentioned. Some of those colonized attitudes a lot of people will have got rid of, which is great. I experienced that in Ireland when I was in Ireland, seeing them dropping the colonized attitudes. And that's not very long ago that Ireland became independent. As Jen says, independence is natural.
Yes.
Bloody well should be.
Yes.
So it's finding out which of the colonized attitudes each person has still got, how much of it they've still got, and then shifting it over to match up with the decolonized attitudes that people have got. But it's easy without, what should we say, without heavy opposition by England, it's difficult to feel enough energy to move away from the status quo. We can be comfortable, put it that way.
Well, I mean, and this would be the argument, isn't it? That's something like, well, you know, so I can imagine plenty of people seeing it with, so telling me, you know, we're not colonized. I don't feel colonized. I don't feel oppression at all. I mean, and I don't think depression would be is far too strong a word. You know, I mean, we have this Senate. It's not great, but, you know, why create a fuss? Why make something worse by becoming independent? And in any case, I don't feel under oppression. Why would I want to read this book? Why would I want to become, as you say, decolonized when I don't feel colonized in the first place?
Yes, yeah. And a number of Welsh nationalists went up to campaign for the Scottish referendum and were greatly excited and energized by what was going on just a few years ago in Scotland. Mm. People really thinking about it, asking themselves questions for the very first time. As you say, what would it be to be independent? Mm. Okay, we can carry on as we are, but how much better it would be if we were independent? Hold our heads high. It's for the workshops I'm going to be doing for Yes Cymru branches and anybody else based on the book. Will help people directly in the hall or wherever we are to move from the one thing to the other and assess themselves. And as Jen says, independence is natural. It'd be great if we all naturally feel so much more independent in ourselves. Hmm. What was your lovely title about the aircraft carrier?
Right. How many aircraft carriers would an independent Wales have? Question mark. It's a long title for a book, which Jen kindly edited for me. So I'm very grateful for her input in that. It's certainly.
Yes. I read all that book and the other book and
all good bookshops and everything. So I am interesting because both yourself and Jen have sort of moved in. I think you've seen Wales from a fresh pair of eyes. I'm just thinking this is maybe a personal question. When yourself, well, you can't really answer for Jen, but I'm sure you've discussed this between yourselves. You know, when you moved back to Wales, if you like, were you disappointed? Did you see Wales as a sort of defeated nation? Did you see the Welsh people, maybe even Welsh nationalists, as sort of too humble, too negative, too depressing? I don't know. How did you feel that? I mean, because the inspiration from this book is, I'd imagine, as all books, has been there in the back of your mind for a good few years, and it's now come to fruition. Was that, did you feel that, were you somewhat disappointed in how Wales was and didn't feel had that confidence in the first place? Or how was your, what was your reaction?
Well, I think working with Jen, working with Alolva, and my book, The Dragon Wakes, was seeing that we needed to do something radical about the decline of Welsh countryside in terms of losing post offices and banks and so on in the villages, the rural crisis. I felt, why aren't we doing more about it? Why aren't there more community workshops, community pubs, community post offices? Why are we letting all these things go? And as you were saying, there's a previous generation, which Jen met quite a few of and interviewed them. And I used to bring them into courses I was running at the University of Aberystwyth. And they'd been doing these great protests for the language. Where was that spirit now? We sort of let them do that work. And then we the younger generation seems to sit back and say, oh, yes, we're a little bit better.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a big discussion within the Welsh national movements in general, isn't it? That you would, that sort of golden generation, the 60s and 70s, without protesting, literally, you know, getting arrested, putting themselves up for not paying fines and stuff. And, you know, it sort of then dissipated after the 80s. And, you know, well, that's partly because the landscape of the argument has changed, hasn't it? So we're from having no status at all, no dedicated TV channel. These are quite easy, and no road signs in Welsh. These are quite easy things to which people grasp. You know, the argument now is more difficult and more nuanced. And maybe that's one reason I think the independence movement and Yes Cymru has grown, is that that's a simple argument which people can understand. I mean, you're either independent or not. I mean, there's discussions, you know, about, you know, what exactly is independence. But I think most people understand that. And in a way, that's the clarity of an argument which we don't really have in the Welsh language movement now, even though the crisis is still as strong. But it's more difficult in a way to campaign against without getting bogged down and stuff. So I think maybe, to one respect, I think that's sort of helped the independence movement, because people say, okay, that I am unhappy about things, or maybe they're concerned about the language or about the decline in rural communities or, you know, the post-industrial communities as well. And I think independence gives people that kind of channel which they can identify and work through. But to do so, as you say, people need to have confidence that they can change. And the book discusses this. I know how, I mean, you can discuss it. I'd like to discuss this now with you, how people can get that gumption, get that confidence to do something, because it is easier to do nothing. And that's the history of a lot of people. So how does the book suggest that people actually just do that?
Well, I think what you've been expressing is another aspect of being colonized. You're saying it's more nuanced, it's more tricky, it's more complicated. And that's another way of not taking a further step towards you yourself being more liberated as a person. Yeah. I mean, this is a personal criticism of you, but using you as an example of somebody saying, oh, yes, well, it's a bit complicated, really. And what we've got to do is feel inside that independence that I think one of the great ones here, the difference is inferior and equal, and then unconquerable. If you feel inside unconquerable, then whatever tolerating attitudes that we have, we can burst through those. If you imagine one of these exercises in the book, if you imagine now that Wales is already independent, and think how that feels, not in your head, but in your chest and your heart and your belly to feel that independence, then to walk down the street is a different experience. Unconquerable. We've been conquered. We've been over-conquered. But individually, you, Sean, have not been conquered, and you need to feel it.
Yeah, and I think, and in a way, the fact that people are saying we're not being conquered to some extent shows how conquered we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that we don't even recognize it. So we see other independent countries, and we think that's fine. We've got no problems with Denmark or Estonia or whatever, being independent. But for some reason, we don't think that's for Wales. And I think that is a sign essentially of, you know, people have accepted that Wales can't. And, you know, there's arguments, you know, we're part of a family of nations in the UK, but deep down we know that isn't the case. I mean, that's the people are playing games maybe for own personal political projects and career, or it's just easier to think like that. And I think that's certainly the case. I mean, and this is what I'm interested in, you know, it is, the facts don't change in effect, is it? It's the individuals which change. And this is what happened in Scotland. I was watching a video with Alex Salmond on YouTube the other day. He used to give a talk somewhere. And he was saying, you know, when they called the referendums independence in Scotland in 2012, you know, independence was on 25%. And as Salmond says, someone unhelpfully released that poll on the day he had the agreement with Cameron to that there would be an independence referendum. Since then, things have changed. You know, the economy hasn't changed as such. You know, there's still as much oil underneath Scottish and waters as there was then. What's changed is people themselves have changed. Yeah. And I think this is the importance of the booklet and the manual. And I think the word manual is an important one, is to try and get the people to change. Because the facts are basically the same. You know, the history has happened, that's gone. But I mean, what needs to change is how people view that and think about that. And I think that's an important point. I mean, sorry, you carry on.
But not to say it's too late.
Yeah, yes.
The Welsh language has deteriorated in terms of the number of people speaking, using it every day. But the Assembly's got the policy to increase the number of Welsh speakers. It's not too late, but if we feel it's too late, we've been defeated by it, and it is too late.
but that's an interesting comparison, because I mean, what's now happening with the Senate, I mean, Jeremy Myles, the education minister here in Wales and outside Wales, has announced it's basically the target for the Welsh government to increase the number of Welsh speakers to 1 million by 2050. That's an arbitrary number, but I think it's a good target. And then basically now to move into a situation where all 16-year-olds leaving education by 2016, essentially bilingual, you know, functionally bilingual. And so they will use confidence, and that's an important word. You know, that policy could have been implemented 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, or in 1988 when I broke the law to try to get something similar implemented. Yeah. But what's changed is people have changed. So Jeremy Myles has changed, or he can now implement this kind of policy. So change is possible because people change, society changes. And so what we need to do with the national movement, and that's why I think the book is important, is try and get to speed up that change.
Yeah.
And also I think there's an element of challenging ourselves, you know, because we're not going to, and it's difficult to do that, Jim, isn't it? Without, especially in the field of psychology, which is something I know nothing about, but I mean, without people getting defensive. And I know, I certainly, that's my reaction to stuff. And I was watching something earlier, you know, when people always often take someone correcting them as criticizing them. Yeah, it's not the same thing. And people often take someone suggesting something as criticism, and it's not the same thing. And it's difficult to have that balance of employing a change and suggesting change, and something which can be quite deep, because everyone has their own identity. That's something which is very personal to people, without them being offended. Because I presume if the people are offended, they don't listen to you. So how do you get around that?
Don't attack people, if possible. When you give some training of this in the book, if you can agree with somebody who is arguing against you, when you can agree, because there's always some things we can agree with, and where you can't agree, don't disagree. ask them why they think that. And then find themselves arguing into your point of view. I was working in Northern Ireland, and it was very inspiring that sitting in a group of nuns and priests with Protestant ministers and Labour Party members and union members talking about their own neighbourhood, arguing like hell against each other, but acknowledging that they had the same experience outside, loose in the houses, damp down the walls, and they were finding solutions. Unemployment of young people, they're finding solutions vigorously, but with respect. And I think that's what we need to do, is to, rather than try and shout down people who disagree with us, find areas where you can't deny our experience. You know, where a Protestant woman would say, well, my husband was shot dead in my arms. They burst through the door and the children were there. And a Catholic woman say, well, my husband was shot dead in my arms on the stairs. And you can't say, no, they didn't. No, it wasn't. And this is the way that those two communities got together. Respect. And somebody saying, well, here's a political solution. Rubbish. A political solution is out of somebody's analytical thought, which has been probably over-colonized, to find local solutions, solutions in our hearts, in ourselves, in our minds, then leads to this kind of respect and the build-up of an energy, as you're saying, an energy and a wish and a will to move forward.
So, I mean, just to bring the conversation to a close, I mean, we're trying to go maybe through some of the main points you have in the manual, you can use that word, because so I don't know if you have it in front of your screen. Maybe we type of things so people have an idea what the book is about, and maybe they've been interested certainly through various Yes Cymru branches to hold discussions about this. So maybe it'd be a good way to get people together and discuss things and go through it.
Yes.
So I mean, I don't know if you have the book there in front of you, maybe some of the main headings which we people have an idea what's being discussed.
Not really.
Oh, never mind. So I mean, I remember there's a
with each colonized attitude,
yeah,
move it on to be decolonized through two stories: Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi, and other people. True stories, as I say, you can't contradict the true story.
Yeah,
you've got to read it and think about it. And it is very quick to work through, but I would like people to work through it, as you're saying, with friends, family, meet around it, work through it, and help each other to recognize, oh, you're a bit defeated in that area, aren't you? What can you do about it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, it is a peculiar situation in Wales. That, you know, people say, oh, Wales isn't colonized, or maybe it was centuries ago, but it wasn't now. But then you ask, you know, why do we have an international football team, but we're not independent politically? And people say, okay, well, you know, it's better off that we're together, working together. And everyone, of course, works together. Nobody's against that. But you see the situation in Ireland where the economy is so much stronger than Wales. There's still problems in Ireland, of course. But I mean, the argument that Wales is better off in the union now, I think it's not tenable. You know, you could make the case maybe in the 1960s, when we still had a manufacturing base and Ireland was still wasn't out of very deep economic problems from the beginning of the 20th century. But that's certainly not the case now. And I mean, you only need to look at the situation of Ireland and Northern Ireland and the Republic to see the exact what happens with Westminster. You know, if the Republic wasn't independent, you can guarantee it would not have an economy which is now stronger than the UK's in terms of per head. You know, absolutely guarantee that. And you can see that with truthfully, because you need to look at Northern Ireland, which is exactly the situation, which has gone from what was the strongest part of the island's economy to the weakest part now. And that is with British rule. And you can, of course, the Troubles are a big part of that. The Troubles did finish 30 years ago, and there's been a big input of money into there since then. So there's something happened within the Republic where they had no material, no minerals or anything they could exploit. Yeah. They were literally at the edge of Europe. Terrible communication. You know, people complaining about traffic on the M4, where they don't even have an M4. So they've managed with independence to turn things around, and there's actually no reason why Wales can't. And you know, the only thing that is stopping us is still this idea that essentially, and you can be as sophisticated as you want, and you can be as intelligent as you are, but essentially it boils down to, I don't think Wales is good enough to be independent.
Yeah.
And that's literally is what the bottom line is. Yeah, and the case that, you know, I don't feel Welsh.
Yeah.
And I wanted to deny that feeling to other people who maybe do. But that is essentially the argument, I think.
And I don't feel, people are saying, I don't feel I can be independent as a person. And that's the big change, I think, as you started this broadcast with, when each individual feels that they can be and are independent, then these other problems melt away. Because, you know, I've heard you, joined you shouting on the street. And you see people's smiles and see their chest lifting and their chin lifting, and they're saying, yes, great. Yeah.
Well, sometimes you need to do a bit of shouting.
Absolutely.
Before we lock up, I would just like to give a mention to Jen, who was with you in the room there. But I was going to say she's your puppet master, but you're doing the talking and she's sitting there. But that's been
sitting there.
But yeah, I mean, Jen's also published a publisher. She's an author. She's an editor.
Yeah.
And some interesting books there about coming into being a Welsh speaker, learning Welsh, speaking Welsh with people, and that experience, which did feed into this book as well. And a very interesting book about George M.F. Davis, who was a big figure at the beginning of the 21st century here in Wales. So I think that having your experience, you know, your family experience, I think, which must have fed into your beliefs and your personal experience. And obviously you go around a lot abroad. You're going to Bavaria in a few days' time to do talks there. I think this adds to quite a complete and an international feel to the book. And you know, you're talking about international experiences. It's not just people who've never left their little village. You know, you're talking about people who do have experiences, life experiences of dealing with different types of people in different types of countries. It's important.
A warning to you, Sean, if you get to be more trouble to the English state, somebody will come and tap you on the shoulder and say, would you like a seat in our House of Lords?
Well, that's what's happened over centuries, Jim.
Would you like to be part of our, we'll give you a car, we'll give you a chauffeur, we'll make you an honorary Englishman. And what do you say to them?
Yeah, well, I decline it. But I mean, this is the strategy. Is it? What the strategy is, you can be, an ethnic Welsh person.
Yeah.
That is, just you're happy to be Welsh. Nobody denies that.
Yeah.
But your civic identity is to be British English. That is, you support the civic identity of the state, isn't it?
Yes.
So the Parliament, the House of Lords and everything. And a lot of people, well, too many people over the centuries have been brought on to that because,
yeah,
you know, it comes a time in many people's lives, I think, okay, well, yeah, I fancy a nice car or a bigger house or hobnob with the greats.
Yeah.
And I think this is also...
They made him an honorary Englishman, and he dropped home rule and
the
elements of independence.
Yes, and I think people need to be cute to this because, I mean, the British state and the Westminster system has, in our case, 700 years of historical learning about how to buy people over.
Yeah.
And it's done very subtly, and it's done, you know, with some element of respect for the person. They don't tell you, you know, you can't say this or that, you know, I mean, but they know exactly what they're doing. There's institutional memory there about, you know, stopping independence movements. And the only way to combat that is to have a big, mass, strong movement and also culture which goes with it, which is quite punchy and quite proud and confident to do that, which I think the book is trying to do. So I think we need to be aware of that, and we need to be aware that the arguments for independence are obviously to do with economics, and we've discussed that on the various Red Radio Yes Cymru podcast. I listened to Dr. John Ball, which is a recent podcast we've done on the Welsh economy. There's more stuff to come on the economy on the way. Mm-hmm. But I think...
Are you going to interview the Archbishop?
Yeah, well, yes, I mean, I'm tempted now. But that is a case in point, because there's a very interesting booklet published in 1937, I think.
Yeah.
Which I may have quoted in one of the articles in the book, in my book. Was someone, it must have been like 15 years after the disestablishment of the church in Wales. So there's a huge campaign for an Anglican church in Wales. It sort of succeeded by 1922. Everything was basically set up. And, you know, and this is the worst time, you know, just as the economy collapsed and the coal mines started.
Yes.
You know, 10 years earlier, we'd have had lots of money about. Mm. And the book basically is written by a fairly dispassionate person. It basically says, you know, much to people's surprise, this worked out okay. You know, who'd have thunk it that, you know, the church in Wales can actually succeed by itself? And, you know, the church in Wales is actually an excellent parable for us, because it is an independent institution. It does have strong links, of course, with the Anglican Communion, which I think is interesting and important for a lot of people, because I think they like this idea, if you're in a small country, that you have links with other countries. But it hasn't, it hasn't been shy to plough its own furrow. And I think women priests started in Wales before in the Anglican Church in England. So, I mean, it is a quite an interesting... I know they were also... the laws, the disestablishment, there's meant to be an element of repatriation, because all money which has flowed out of Wales since the 12th century to Canterbury, and that didn't come back, you know. So there's a lot of money due to the Anglican Church in Wales, which I think by now they just say, okay, forget it. And I think as a template for the independence movement, I think it does offer some ideas for us in terms of building a mass movement to have that in the first place, and then going through the argument and going through the legal process of disestablishing, which is what independence is. And having, you know, an element of cooperation there, which I think a lot of people in Wales would want to keep at some level in any case.
Yeah.
The Anglican Church is actually quite a good prototype for us. But the book just says, you know, basically it worked out okay. And almost surprising itself that, you know, we thought it'd be a crashing disaster. But no, even though we didn't get the money we meant, and even though there's a Great Depression, and it was written in 1937, it was a very tough time. They said, you know, things, you know, basically are working out okay. And this is exactly the same situation with Wales. You know, I have absolutely even less concern about being independent now than I did like 10 years ago. I mean, you know, it's not, the issue's there to be worked through, but, and we need to be ready for them. But the idea that Wales wouldn't succeed is absolutely bonkers, I think. The way we've seen Westminster conduct itself. It's not magic. And I think this is something else you work out in a book, you say in a booklet. You know, this idea that the metropolitan state, whatever we want to call it, the imperial state, the metropolitan state, has some kind of magic about it, and some kind of, you know, the having independence is something very, very difficult. It's not. It is just managing an economy. People can do that badly, of course. But it's not rocket science. It's not inventing anything new. We do this in any case. You know, these,
I mean, 22 states the size of Wales or smaller have become independent of the British Empire.
Yes, and in much more difficult situations than we ever have. And even same in Eastern Europe as well. You know, far more difficult situations than we or Scotland would ever have. And you know, with less of the institutional set up as well, you know, where we do have a Senate, we do have, we're already making laws, we're already collecting like 20% of our taxes. You know, most countries becoming independent didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
Very little of that before they came independent. So we're becoming independent, which is a much smaller step than it would be for the vast number of independent states which have become independent. But so, Jim Windigate, thanks a lot for making the time to talk to Radio Yes Cymru. It'd be great to see you, and I'm sure if you can contact us or contact the Yes Cymru Centrally, I'm sure yourself and Jen will be more than ready to go speak to people. You're based down there in South Ceredigion, so from your phone number, because you still use this landline, Jim, which is something I don't see very often. It's in the cardigan that the Abertavi code.
Use the mobiles. We never answer the landline.
So you'll be somewhere around Ceredigion, cardigans or Newcastle Emery and all that kind of area. But I'm sure you're ready to travel different places to talk to people. So the name of the booklet is 20 Radical Steps to Welsh Independence by First Decolonizing Our Minds, which I think is a great title, by yourself, Jim Wingate, and Jen Llewellyn co-authoring. And it's published by Gwasgol Olfa here in, well, Aberystwyth in Talapon. And it'll be out by the end of April, so that'll be good.
Yes,
it's a nice little book, something handy which you could buy, you read over a coffee in a cafe, tick things off, maybe scribble on it, give it to a friend to get the conversation starting, maybe even discuss within the Yes Cymru group as well, or family and friends. Jim, diolch am yr amser. Thanks for making the time.
Croeso.
And I'm sure we'll speak again, and be good to see how things develop with the book as well. And if you say hello to Jen Llewellyn as well.
Well done, Sean.
Oh, well.
Yes, Cymru Radio.